Okay, welcome to this next lecture on virtual machines. So now we have started to reason about how to translate functional languages into a suitable virtual machine. And perhaps for a small recap, last time we have decided that there could be, for the same expression, different contexts within which we want to translate this expression, and accordingly different kinds of sequences of code which we might want to generate. This you should think as related to what we have noticed in the translation of C, where for the same expression we either could compute R code or L code, depending on whether we are interested in the address or in the value of a variable or an expression. And so here we have, for a functional language, we will essentially consider three kinds of code. So the code C, to start with the last one, is meant to generate code which does not evaluate the expression but constructs a closure for that expression, so that later when we decide to access the value of this expression, we might use this closure to get hold of the expression, get its value, and override the closure with a value. So that is this code C thing. Now the kind of vanilla and standard form of code which we would generate, this corresponds to the code R in C. This is the code generated for E, which when executed will determine the value of E, will calculate the value of E. But, and that is a crucial point, this value will be constructed in the heap, and on the stack only will be returned a reference to that value in the heap. This corresponds to when you think of Java, when you compute with integers and you return an integer, then you construct an object in the heap holding the integer, and on stack you only return a reference to that data element in the store. This is the code V. Now, in some cases, we do not just want to have the value as constructed in the heap, but we want to have the value available on the stack. So this is the code B. This is a sequence of instructions which evaluates the expression E and returns its value directly on the stack. So this code B does not make sense for any kind of values, but only makes sense for integer values. So values which can be returned on the stack because they are numbers. So a function is kind of an object, if you like, is encapsulated as an object, and that naturally lives on the heap, and it doesn't make sense to return it on the stack. But for values such as integers, this is a basic value. This we might want to return on the stack because our operations, such as addition, multiplication, division, subtraction, and such stuff, that these kind of operations expect their arguments naturally on the stack. Okay? So these three kinds of code we might want to construct, and they are not completely independent. So in some sense, these two are related, because they only differ, they both have to determine the value, and they only differ in where to return the result. And also these two are related, because somehow if I construct the closure only, still at some point we may want to evaluate the closure, and this evaluation of the closure requires this code sequence, which is the code V sequence. So somehow the closure must contain a code pointer to a code V sequence of the expression. Okay? So in that sense, these three kinds of code are not completely unrelated, but kind of are closely related. So let us start now to so that was kind of the high level philosophy. Now let's see how the nitty-gritty details look like. So let's see. So we start with expressions which are of the most simple form and see how we might want to translate them. So the first thing is, so code B. So let's see what we can do. So the result should be returned on the stack. So if B is a constant, like a 5, so what should be code B? What should that do? Well, we want to have a code sequence which constructs the value 5 on the stack. So we have already an operation for that at hand. This is this load constant operation from the C machine, which we kind of borrow here and use. So that's the most natural thing. Now, if we have a single argument operator, such as minus or negation, so what would we do? We want to the code B for an expression of that unary operator applied to an argument expression E. What should that be? Okay, so the result should be on the stack. But then this operator here, for that we have an instruction, which is this instruction op. And that operator, that instruction also expects its argument on the stack. So that means we would recursively construct a code B sequence for the argument E, which is this one. And once that will return its value on the stack, and that is the right place where to apply this operator. Okay? So that's the thing here. And then the same thing, if we have a binary operator, we proceed in exactly the same style. For this binary operator, we have an instruction, this op2, so like addition. So for that we have, for the plus, we have an operator addition, available in our virtual machine. That operator will return its value on the stack. This is fine because we want code B, so the result should be on the stack. And its arguments are also taken from the stack. So therefore, for the arguments E1 and E2, we have to determine their values and return the values on the stack. So this is done by the code B for the E1 and the code B for the E2. Okay? So that is, in that sense, this kind of code, which I have shown you here, is the most natural way how to deal with expressions. There are, very soon, so there are two minor things. The first thing, we have not yet talked about variables. The values of, I have to show you how to access the values of variables, but clearly, in order to deal with variables, we have to provide this code-generating function an address environment row. So this is for the variables, which I have not yet shown you so far. And the other thing is that here is an extra argument. Perhaps you have asked for that. This is this SD. This means the stack distance. And this stack distance is an argument which is not accessed here in that simple form of code. But that will be also be necessary for accessing variables. So therefore, I already have, for completeness reasons, provided you with this stack distance here. And you see this is an extra argument passed to the code-generating function. And at some points, it is not this. It is not just passed as is, but it changes. So you see here, for the second argument, it changes. We no longer pass the value SD, but the value SD plus 1 for the E2. Can you imagine why the second argument, the second call here to the code B function does not receive SD, but SD plus 1 as an extra argument? Can you imagine why this is the case? SD is the abbreviation, once more, for stack distance. Now, what is the difference between the call to code B for E1 and the call for code B for E2? Yes, so that's it. The stack has been increased by one. So therefore the stack distance, whatever it might be, given that it measures the distance to some fixed address in the stack, has increased by one because the value of E1 has been pushed on top of the stack before the code for the E2 is starting. Yeah, so therefore in that sense we can imagine that the stack distance has increased by one here, and you notice here that it has not increased it stays the same if I have a unary operator, because then nothing has changed. Okay, so what we learn here is that the ordinary evaluation of expressions is quite for the code B is quite so as we had as we did code R, for example, for expressions in C. The only thing which we kind of additionally keep track of is this mysterious extra parameter stack distance, which we will explain later. Okay. Now, experience that this code B is not so difficult to construct, we might kind of become more ambitious and try to look at more complicated forms of expressions. And one more complicated form is a conditional expression. So what does a conditional expression do? So first this E0 is evaluated, and it is evaluated to a value, because we need this value in order to do this jump at zero thing. Yeah? So that means for the E0, we also require the result, the value of E0 on top of the stack. Therefore, code B for E0. Okay? And once we have that, then we have this kind of decoration with the jump at zero and the jump B to kind of this discriminate between the different the control flow. So between those two jumps, we first have the code for E1. This code is the then part, and then after starting at address A, the code for the else part. And for both of them, the result of the ultimate result of all this conditional expression is expected on the stack. So therefore, we do for both, for the then part and for the else part, do produce a code sequence which will ultimately return the value on top of the stack. Okay, so therefore code B for E1 and code B for E2. Okay, and since when we arrive, for example, at the then part, or when we arrive at the else part, or when we arrive at the then part, in both cases, the value for E0 has been popped off has been consumed by the jump at zero instruction. So therefore, the stack distance for the then part as well as for the else part is the same as for the whole expression. So therefore, this SD here is the same here, there, and there. Okay? So that is kind of these explanations which I have listed here. We have already discussed, and so we saw that this code B is not so difficult, and it's quite related to the code R, which we have seen in the C machine, code generation schemes of the C machine. Now the question is, what do we do? There are thousands of other expressions which we have not yet covered. So what do we do for these? Well, there is always one kind of, if you like, fallback. If we want to do code B for any other expression, we can always do it in such a way that we call the code V that will evaluate the E and return the value of E in the heap, and return on the stack a reference to it. So this is which we always can do. This is in particular what we can do for variables. Yeah. So now, but that is not, if we then require the value of E on the stack, we could kind of use a dereferencing instruction, which is new, which you have to implement and which you have to provide by the virtual machine, which is this instruction get basic. So it is like get the value you have an integer object, and you want to access the value inside this, the integer, the int value inside the integer. So this would be done in Java. You have a method, and this is done here by means of that virtual machine instruction get basic. So therefore, this instruction here is the implementation. It's the natural thing what you might expect. You assume that you have a reference to a basic value on top of the stack, and then you just access the value. Yeah, and there's clearly you can if you like. So if the functional language has a decent type system, then this it will only if you access the value, a basic value, then you can be sure that there will be a basic value, and so therefore nothing can go wrong. But if you have an untyped functional language for some reason, or kind of a dynamically typed thing because you find it fashionable to compete with all these scripting languages and think that types are overrated, then you can do that also. But then the virtual machine must take care that things don't go wrong. That is, they have to check the tag, whether you really have an int or something else. Okay? So that was code B, now we have, since we have this default for all the expressions which do not fit, for which we could not provide direct implementation, so that is fine, and we are done with the code B. Now, then let's see whether the code V sequences, whether they are equally difficult or equally easy. So let's start. So if we want to do code V for some constant B. So like 5. What can we do? Okay, so in that sense, we have to construct then a data element, a basic value in the heap, and return a reference to it on top of the stack. How can we do it? Okay, so we need kind of a new instruction. So one possibility is to do it in such a way to decompose this new instruction into two operations. One is loading the constant on top of the stack that we have already available in our virtual machine, and then kind of use another instruction which takes the value which is on top of the stack and puts it into the heap. We do not have that operation already at hand, so therefore we will provide it freshly for our virtual machine, and here it is. So here it is. We have called it make basic, so it expects a value on top of the stack and puts it into the heap. And this is done by means of that instruction which I have already promised that our implementation of the heap would provide us with, namely a new instruction. So it's kind of a new operation. Okay? So that was easy. So that kind of solves the case for just a basic value. Now let's see what we do with code V for an operator application, say a unary operator application. So the result should be in the heap. But the operator box 1 expects its argument on the stack. So this means for the E, we would use the code B scheme. This is a sequence of instructions which returns the value of E on top of the stack. Then we can apply the operator, which we have at hand for we apply the virtual machine instruction corresponding to the operator. If this is a minus, then this would be a neg or something. And then afterwards, then we have the result of the expression on top of the stack. And now we have to put it into the heap. That is, we provide this make basic instruction. Yeah? So the same as here. And in the same way, we proceed in the same way we proceed for binary operators. So the binary operator expects its arguments on the stack. So therefore, we use the code B scheme for generating code for E1 and E2. This will provide us with two values on the stack. Then we apply the instruction for the operator. This is this op2. And then now we have the result of the expression on the stack, but that is the wrong place. We have to put it into the heap, and for that we again apply our super duper new instruction make basic. Okay? So that was easy. But you see, so in order to do this code V, we might for certain sub expressions do the code B. And that is the situation we will again be confronted with when we do code V for a conditional expression. Why? Because this is zero, which is the condition. That value is required on the stack because this jump at zero instruction expects that value on the stack. So therefore, we do the code B for the E0. This provides us with the value of E0 on top of the stack. Then we can do we can use this value to make this conditional jumping. And then for the then part and the else part, those values are meant to be in the heap. So therefore, for these, we now use the code V. Yeah? And here is again this jump around, this jumpy. Okay? So that's, in that sense, there's a subtle interplay between the code B and the code V. Okay? And so this make basic instruction we have already looked at. So nothing special with that. Now, so that already it does the job for these simple expressions which are kind of at the heart of functional programming. But now comes, not very much can be done without variables. So therefore, we have now to see how can we deal with variables. And so the first thing is that we have to distinguish between local variables and global variables, because local variables and global variables will be accessed in different way. So local variables, you might think of, this is like local variables in C. They are maintained on the stack. Now here additionally, we might have global variables. And global variables in the functional language do not live in the stack. For that, they are kind of part of the context, and that is collected in a global vector, which has its own addressing mode. So let us see here now what is the local and what is global, and which places. So let us see here this little functional program. So here we kind of have introduced this variable C, this name C. Here we introduce a variable name F, and in that place we apply F to C. Okay? So this when I arrive at that expression, there are local, F and C are local variables. They are these two things. These are those introduced by lets. They live on the stack. But inside F, now what happens if I go inside F? So inside F, this is this. Inside F, this is in this area. So in that area, we have kind of, in this block, if you like, we have the formal parameter. This is this A. That you might consider as a local variable. And we have the B, which is also a local variable. But then we also have this C. And the C kind of arrives from the outside. The C comes from outside the function. It comes from here. So the C is a local variable at that place. But it is not a local variable inside the function. Inside the function it is global. Yeah, because this function can be moved around and called in several places. And somehow the value of the C must be kind of glued together to the function. Yeah? So and that value of C is kind of wrapped into the function C. It is determined once when the function is constructed. Yeah, that is the thing with the static binding. So it's not, if it were dynamic binding, so you might in different contexts have different values for C. But here, typically modern functional languages have static binding, and that means whenever F is constructed, this value of C is collected. The current value of C is collected. Yeah? Okay? And now these global variables, here in this case the C for the F, they are collected into a vector which is maintained in the heap. So this is this global vector. And now the accessing, so inside the global vector, this is a vector. If you think of it's a vector, it's a special form of an array, and array addressing starts at zero. So they start, therefore the global variables in the function, their addressing starts with 0, 1, 2, 3. Yeah? And that means whenever an F object, and the same is true for a closure, whenever such a thing is constructed, we will construct this global vector, and then the global variables inside that expression, inside the body of the function or inside the closure, are kind of receive their relative addresses and they refer to this global vector. Now this global vector is somehow, when we are at a particular point, so for example in the body of a function, then we kind of must get hold of the global vector for that function, and that kind of we will do by providing a fresh register. This is the register GP, which points to the current global vector for retrieving the bindings for the global variables. Okay? So this is the way how we will access global variables. We will see. So whenever you enter the body of a function, because you due to a call, you will have to set the global vector. When you return from the call, you have to recover the old global vector. Yeah? So that was the global variables, and now the local variables, and that is the point. The local variables are sitting on the stack. So, they are sitting on the stack. So, in general, the address environment will map variables, will classify variables on whether they are local or global, and then provide them with a relative address. And this relative address can be positive or negative. For globals, it's not negative, but for locals, it might also be negative. So that the local variables are sitting in the stack frame, and And now the question is, how will the local variables be accessed? So the natural way to do would be relative to a frame pointer. So we have a frame pointer into the stack, and we could think of that starting from there, we might try to access the local variables. There's one point that, we have inside our code a function application like this one. So it's an E prime, which should evaluate to a function, and then this E prime is applied to local to arguments E0 to EM minus 1. Yeah? Then the our observation is, okay, so if that e prime were an Emery function, then everything is fine, because then we know that the formal parameters of that function should be mapped to E0 to EM minus 1. But that need not be the case. In fact, the function E prime, so E prime might be a function which has either less or more than M arguments. Why? Because it could be a function which receives only some of its arguments, this is undersupply. So if you have a ternary function, you could provide only one argument. What is then the result? The result is then a function which takes two further arguments. So in that sense, you need not provide as many arguments as the function requires. Or you, on the other way around, when you have this expression e prime, might result in a function which has already some of its arguments. Yeah? So it means we it might be that here, in this place, would be some further arguments which have to be added to the list of parameters. Or the function f or e prime is a function which takes one argument, so it consumes the e0, but then returns a function which consumes another argument, which would consume the e1 and so on. So this means that the arities of functions are by no means clear from such an function application, which we might see in the code. So therefore, now imagine what we could do. So if we have a, what we could do is that we might kind of try to push first E0, then E1, and then so to push all the arguments here on top of the stack, and then in the end the E prime, a reference to the E prime. So that would be nice in that sense that E0 could be directly addressed, so we could use addressing relative to the frame pointer. But now if this E prime is something which evaluates to a partially applied function with arguments, say, A0 and A1, then we have to kind of squeeze these extra arguments below the E0 into the stack. So this is ugly, because that means we have to shift all the E0 to EM-1 up in the stack and squeeze something in, which is an expensive operation. So that would not be, does not seem natural. The alternative is that we evaluate the right hand, the arguments of the function E prime from right to left, and push them, and push first the EM-1 on top of the stack, and only in the end the E0. In some sense, this is the same decision which we took for C, where we also, for a variable number of arguments, started to the right with the evaluation. And that we would do here also. And in the very end, we then would evaluate the E prime. And evaluating the E prime may produce further arguments to be pushed on the stack, but these are put on top of the stack, and that's fine, because that's a cheap operation. So, but that means that now we cannot use the frame pointer anymore for addressing the formal parameters, because so the A0 does not know how many extra arguments have already been placed on top of the stack before the A0 is pushed. Yeah? So this means the frame pointer somehow no longer can be used for addressing the formal parameters. So, but what else can we do in order to access the formal parameters if we can't use the frame pointer? What else might we use? The stack pointer. So that's the obvious thing, because here at that point, our super duper stack pointer points to this address, and so A0 is just where the stack pointer points to, and A1 is stack pointer minus 1. So what is the only problem when we use the stack pointer? That during expression evaluation, for example, we push extra elements on top of the stack. So the A0 suddenly is no longer at stack there where the stack pointer points to, but two instructions below. So that's the only problem. So the stack pointer may kind of move away from the position where it has been when the last formal actual parameter has been pushed. So, but the distance where the stack pointer has moved to from that position, say from enter, when you enter the function, stack pointer is at some position, this is this SP0, and then from that it may move away, and that is the stack distance. So, but since we kind of, if we succeed in keeping track how much the stack distance is, we simply subtract that from the stack, from the current stack pointer. That gives us the SP0, by that we recover the SP0, and then use the relative address which we have stored in our address environment to really access the locals. So that is our idea which we use here. Okay? So that means, once again, so the difference between the current value of the stack pointer and that reference address SP0, this is maintained in this extra argument SD, or stack distance, which can be determined at compile time for every position in the code. And that allows us to access the locals as if the stack pointer would always point to this particular point SP0. Now, if we have decided upon that approach, then the formals would be addressed. The formals would be addressed relative to this SP0. SP0 points to the position when the function is entered. So therefore, it points to the leftmost argument, this is this x0, and then x1, x2, x3, and so on. This is in this ordering, they will therefore receive negative addresses because they are below the SP0. So therefore, x1 will receive relative address minus 1, x2 minus 2, and so on. Okay? And then the current address, the absolute address for the ice formal parameter then is SP0 minus I. If I is, if we have XI, if you want to access XI. And that SP0 is obtained from the current SP by subtracting the stack distance. Okay? And then we additionally have to subtract the I. Okay, now what about the local variables? So the local variables are pushed on top of the stack. So therefore, local variables y1, y2, y3, and so on will be successively pushed on the stack, and they may receive. Positive addresses 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yes. And clearly it's not so that nothing is in between. It could be that a local variable is created during expression evaluation, so there could be some extra temporary variables sitting between the local variables y1 and y2. So now, and for these, the absolute address of yi, where I is the relative address for the local variable yi, then is determined as stack this sp0 plus I, and again sp0 is recovered from sp by subtracting the stack distance. Okay, and now how do we then get hold of a variable? So the code V for variable X with an address environment rho and current stack distance D is an instruction which is either an instruction push log or push glob instruction. And in order not to do this case distinction all the time, we introduce a macro here. This is this get var macro for variable x and a address environment rho and a stack distance d. Now, if we are in a call by need environment, this by that accessing the variable will push a reference to not necessarily to a value on top of the stack, but possibly to a closure, and then we have to provide somehow a means to check whether we have a value or whether we have a closure, and if we have a closure, to evaluate the closure and return the replace it by the value. So this is an extra effort which we have to do, which is we have so far we have no means to do it, but we can kind of provide already a virtual machine instruction. This is this machine instruction eval. And we will later see how this instruction eval is implemented. For the moment, we just conceive that such an instruction is required, and we just generate it. So in that sense, it is a placeholder or a promise to the future, and we have to fill in an implementation of this eval later. Okay? And if we have a purely call by value functional language like OCaml, then this eval can be eliminated. And I see here that here this kind of brackets is kind of too much, can be removed. Okay. Now the question is, what is this get var? And so if rho of x is local, a local variable with relative address I, then we do the following. We compute the difference between the stack distance and I and do a push log for that thing, and now we need to know what is this push log instruction, and here is what push log instruction does. So n is the stack distance, so that is the number of memory cells on top of the sp0. So if you like, this here is so that is not the right thing. I must make a picture a little bit different. So somewhere down here is the sp0, and that n, and here, so the distance from here to there, this is the stack distance, sd, and then the I is, this is the I, and therefore we subtract I from the stack distance. This gives us the n, and then we use this we use that to access the corresponding reference to the local variable in the stack. So that means we push log n puts the content of s of sp minus n on top of the stack. Yeah. So we have to compute stack distance minus I to determine the difference between the top of the stack and the value which we access. So, and that number is then passed to the push log, which is a positive number, and it goes as much we go down, and that is what we put on top of the stack. Now the push, for the globals it's much easier. Push glob I would then take the vector pointed to by the global vector, and then uses I to index that vector. So this is this instruction here. So I refers to the entry inside the array inside the global vector, and it is used and that value then is put, this value then is put on top of the stack. So perhaps for this push log, we may try to reason a little bit that the address which we push is really the right one. As we said, the local variable with relative address I resides at this particular address in the stack. Now the SP0 is just the stack pointer minus the stack distance, and then we just do re-bracketing and use and that means SP minus this difference is really then the address which we will have to address. Okay? So now that was kind of the two new instructions which we need to access variables. And now let's immediately check whether we are able to generate code for some kind of expression. So, and the most simple expression we might think of is A plus C, B plus C, sorry, B plus C, where for simplicity let us assume that B is a local variable, relative address 1, and C is a global variable, relative address 0. Okay? And then stack distance is 1. So how would the code look like? So the first thing is we have to get hold of the value of B. Then we have to get hold of the value of C. Then we add, and then we make produce the value in the stack. Yeah. So that's the way how to proceed. Now let's look first at we have to get the value of B. How do we do it? So we have to do this get var B row 1. Now that means, so the stack distance for the moment is 1. The relative address of B is 1. So we have to do a push log. 1 minus 1 is 0. Since we may be in a call by need environment, we have to do an eval to replace the closure with a value if it is not yet a value, and if it is a value, we do nothing. And then we have determined the value of E in the heap, and now we require it on the stack because we have to do the addition, so therefore we have to do this get basic thing. Okay? So that was the code for getting a hold of the B. Now getting hold of the C is similar, only that C is a global variable. Now, at the moment, stack distance is 2, so you see, to get the value of C is independent of stack distance. It's just because the addressing takes the relative address, which is zero, and uses that for accessing the global. Again, we have to do the eval and the get val, and then we have get basic, and then we have the value of C on top of the stack. Then we add and then produce the basic value. Now you see here what I have additionally done is, although it is not necessary, although we require the stack distance for the, in this particular case only for the very first instruction to access the value of B, I have provided the stack distance before every instruction which we produce here, because that on the one hand shows you that the stack distance can always be computed statically for every instruction, and also this systematic keeping track of stack distances provides us with the stack distance whenever we need it. And let us again see whether we made no error here. Originally, stack distance was 1, because this is this one. Then we do a push log 1. This puts one further element on top of the stack, so therefore now stack distance is 2. Then we do an eval. So this will not change the stack distance, because either we have a reference to a value, then this reference is not changed. And if we have a reference to closure, then this reference will be replaced by reference to a value. So therefore, nothing will change here in the stack distance. So therefore, before the next instruction, we still have stack distance 2. Then we do this get basic. So this takes a reference and replaces it by the value. By that, the stack also does not change. The stack height, the stack distance does not change. So therefore, we have a 2 here as well. Then we do this push glob 0. This pushes another reference on top of the stack. So therefore, we have now 3 here. Eval again does not change. So therefore, still 3 here. Get basic does not change. So therefore, we have still stack distance 3 here. Then we do the add, which takes the 2 topmost elements on top of the stack and kind of returns the result. Therefore, the stack distance shrinks by 1. And then we do the make basic. So this takes the value and replaces it by a reference to a value. So therefore, the stack distance does not change. And this means that after execution, before this execution of that of the code V for B plus C, if there the stack distance was 1, afterwards it is 2, and this is fine because an extra reference has been pushed on top of the stack. Okay? I hope by that every detail of this, what is scribbled here on that slide, has been explained. Is there a question? Okay. So you have seen, according we now have the possibility to access the values of variables. Now let's see how variables come into existence. Yeah. So how are they created? So the most simple possibility how we may introduce a fresh variable is using a let expression. So that is since it's the most simple case, we will consider it in the very first thing. So how does a let expression look like? So we could have a sequence of let expressions. So here the variable y1 is introduced, then the variable y2 is introduced, and so on. In the end, yn is introduced, and then in the end, e0 is evaluated. And when after y1 has been introduced, the value is the name y1 is available in the expression e2 and in all subsequent expressions. But in e1, the variable y1 is not yet available. Yeah? So because it is not yet there. So now what would we have to what would our implementation have to provide us with? Well, it has to provide it has to allocate the local variables y1 to yn. And in case, so in the call by value case, so that is the most natural setting, then we have to provide, evaluate the e1 to a value, and that we have to, and then we have to make it available, this value via the y1 and so on. So that means in the call by value setting, we would evaluate the expressions and simply put them onto the stack, and then use our adjust our address environment so that the variables y1 will access the value for e1 and so on. Now in the case of call by need, we essentially do exactly the same thing, only that we will not evaluate the expressions e1 to en to values, but only construct closures for them, and then would bind the variables to these values. And after these local variables have been provided, then ultimately e0 is evaluated, and by using the fresh auxiliary variables y1 to yn. And once we are done with that, we might pop the stack and remove the local variables again. Okay, so now in the value of call by value, things are quite simple. In this code V scheme, the point is that the E0 in the end, so that is the value which we want to compute, and for the value for the E1 to En, we only construct closures. So we only construct closures for E1 to En, and by putting these codes in sequence, the code C for E1 will construct the closure and leave a reference to it on top of the stack. So then the code C for E2 will also construct the closure and leave a reference to it on top of the stack. So this means from here to here, the stack distance always grows by 1, because one more reference is left on top of the stack. So until here, the stack distance has increased by n. Yeah? So therefore, when we evaluate E0, we evaluate it with the stack distance SD plus n. Now, that is one thing. And the other thing is that also the address environment changes originally for the E1, we have the address environment for the whole expression. Now when we move on to E2, we have a new address environment. Why? Because the variable Y1 has been introduced. Yeah? And likewise, when we arrive here at the main expression, the E0, we have introduced n variables. So therefore now we have a new address environment row n. And here is how these address environments are constructed. Well, the address environments are constructed in such a way that the row j is obtained from row by successively adding the variables y1 to yn. So it's a little bit misleading, because it assumes that somehow the variables y1 to yn are distinct, but this need not be the case. So the better writing would be to say that the row i that the row zero equals rho, and rho I plus 1 is rho I plus the y I maps to L S D plus I. Yeah, so we successively, because it could all the variables y1 to yn could all be the same y. So that's, because it's always, functional programmers find it often boring to introduce always fresh names, so they use the same name again and again and again. And so one might use the same name for y1, y2, y3. Yeah? So you could, just to give you a very small example, you could say let x equals 1 in let x equals x times x plus 2 in let x minus 5 in and then x plus 7. Yeah, you could write it like that, and that means it's always a fresh variable which you introduce, but it has the same name and it overrides the old variable. Okay, so this means that this x here is used here, and this x here is used there, and this x here then is used there. Okay? Okay, so that's in the way how one would kind of generate code for this. These let expressions, it's the most simple way. We simply concatenate the code for the right-hand sides. One more thing: in case of if we are in OCaml and not in Haskell world, and in the OCaml world, one would say, okay, we don't need the closures. That is, in these places here, we would always use directly code V of the EI. We directly construct code. That emit code which constructs the value and do not do this closure thing. So now let's see a little bit what we can to make it a bit what we can do here. So here assume we have this kind of thing. So let A equal 19 in let B equal A times A in A plus B. So if we want to evaluate that, what would we do? Okay, so that A equal 19, that means we have in a call by value setting, initially row is the empty address environment and stack distance is 0. And now again here we keep track of the stack distances. And then let's see. So the first thing is we have to compute, since we are in a completely call by value environment, and we want to compute code V for this expression E, so then we have to do code V for the 19. That's the first thing, and that is easy. This is just load the constant 19 and make a basic value out of it. That's it. And after that, our address environment maps A to which relative address? To relative address 1. Okay? So now comes B. We then have to kind of get hold of, we have to compute the R value. We have to compute the code V, produce the code V for the right-hand side of B, which is A times A. Okay, the current stack address is 1. The relative address of A is also 1, so we have to compute push log 1 minus 1, which is push log 0. Then we do get basic to get hold of the value of A. Okay, and now the stack distance is 2, and then we have to do the same thing, produce code again for A. But now since the stack distance is 2, the relative address of... Sorry, I made a mistake. So here, There's an L. The relative address of A is 1. So now 2 minus 1 is 1. So although it is the same variable which we access, we access it by a different pushlock instruction, namely by pushlock 1. So before we had pushlock 0, but now we have pushlock 1 because the stack distance has changed. And therefore, we kind of need a different instruction to access the same variable. Okay? So that's a phenomenon which you encounter if you add if you address variables through the stack pointer. So we get the value of that, the content of that thing by using this get basic. Now we have the twice the value of A on top of the stack. And then we can do the multiplication, and that provides us with the value of A times A on top of the stack, but we have to put it into the heap. And therefore we do a make basic here. Now we have computed the right-hand side, the V code for the B. And now the B, what relative address does it get? So the B gets the relative... B gets which relative address? L and 2. Yeah? L, 2. Okay, and that is, now we are at that position, at that point here, and now we arrive at the A plus B thing, the main expression. So for that, we kind of have to get the value of A. So stack distance is currently 2, relative address is 1, 2 minus 1 is 1, so therefore we need push log 1 to get the value of A, and to get a reference to the value of A, we do the get basic because we have to do the addition. So we have to get it's the content. So this is this one. And now the stack distance has increased to 3. Now we have to get the hold of the B. B is to get is a push lock, but stack distance minus relative address, 3 minus 2 is 1. So it's a push lock 1. And you notice... Also, it is the same pushlock instruction. It now refers not to A, but to B, because the stack distance has changed. So therefore, you must be, therefore now you kind of appreciate that we keep track in our, before our, in every instruction with the stack distance, because by that we can kind of decode, if you like, what the pushlock instruction really accesses to. So this pushlock one now accesses the B, and we have to get its content. Its content, that is this one. Here it is. And now we have a push lock. The B has increased the stack distance now to 2, to 4. Get basic will not change it. We add the two values, A to A and B, and that gives decreases the stack again by 1. So therefore now the stack distance is 1. The value A plus B is on the stack. We put it into the heap. And now... we have the value A plus B computed, and now we have to do one more thing, and that is this slide 2. What is this slide 2? So at the end of this let expression, the two variables which have been introduced, the A and the B, the two local variables move out of scope, so they can be therefore squeezed out of the stack by moving down the result to... elements down. So here is the slide K. It kind of moves the value on top of the stack, K values down. Okay? So in that sense, now you are you can deal with local variables, at least those local variables which are introduced by lets. Now let's see what we can do with what we have to do with functions. So that is now an extra crucial thing, because we have a functional language. That is the key thing to deal with functions. Okay, so now if we have a function, if you have something, now what kind of code we are looking for? we are looking at code like that. So we introduce a variable, for example, and that receives such a functional value. What do we have to do for it? So we have to construct a functional value. So when we see that, we have to construct a functional value. And that means, and for that we have provided extra objects in the heap. Such a thing must be constructed. So this functional value must not only contain... what should it contain? So it must contain a vector for the globals of that function so that later we can evaluate the call. It must also contain a code pointer to the code which is executed when the function is called. So we need this kind of code pointer, and essentially this it is. Yeah. So here, so this task is we have to create a global vector. We have to, now we said that a functional object not only contains a global vector, it also contains an argument vector for those arguments which have already been supplied. When we initially have the first function definition, then the argument vector is empty. So therefore, initially, we have an empty argument vector. And then we have to kind of somewhere produce the code which is will be executed when the function is called, but that a reference to that functional, to that a code pointer, if you like, to that code must be placed into the functional object. And that is the creation of the functional object. So here is therefore the code for our super duper functional thing. So we have such a B, we find such a thing in our code. Code V will produce, will return a value. So that is a, will return a reference to this functional object in the heap. So as we said, the first step is to construct the global vector. This global vector is constructed, so here, well, the global vector is constructed by this instruction, but before we apply that instruction, we push the references to all the globals on top of the stack. So we get hold, assume that the global variables which live, which we might find inside the body of the E, yeah, these are those variables which are not local in E, and which are not formal parameters, so which come from the outside world. So those are kind of, we may use the row to get hold of them. So outside they are local, they are global, they are whatnot. So we push all references to all of them on top of the stack. So this happens here. If the set of global variables is set 0 to set G minus 1. So G global variables. So, and yeah, we put them on top of the stack. How do we do it? So the first variable, using our make sure get var, we put on top of the stack. The next variable we put again on top of the stack, but please note that now the stack distance has increased. So therefore, if it's a local variable, the addressing this will affect the addressing. So in the end, we have then G variables on top of the stack. And then we put those variables of which have been put on the onto the stack into the heap by making a vector of a sufficient size. So this get vector thing, here it is. So we have pushed all these variables on top of the stack, and we put them now into the vector. And note that the first variable, the set 0, is down here. And that set 0, therefore, arrives here. Okay, so that is kind of the construction of the global vector. And now then we have to construct this functional object. We don't know yet how to do it, but whenever we encounter a new task, we create a new instruction for it. So that was the first new instruction which we required. The next one will construct a functional value by assuming that a reference to a global vector is on top of the stack. Additionally, in order to construct this functional object, we require the start address of the code for the function. So this is this A. So that is, in some point of our code, we now have to provide the code which is executed when the function is called. Not when the functional object is constructed, that is one thing. The other thing is what happens if the function is called. So this code is here, and it starts at address A. And this address A is wrapped into the functional object. Now we have to this code, which is executed when the function is called, must be placed somewhere in our code. And one possibility to create it is to create it right away. Right away after the code for construction, the functional value. But evaluate right away the functional body, but jump over it, because we kind of now continue with the rest of whatever comes after the construction of the functional value. So this green thing is only to be executed when the function is called. We only, for convenience, place it here in that place, so therefore we have to do an immediate jump across it and continue afterwards. Yeah? So this is like, that is, yeah. So now, I kind of remove all these colors. Let us have a very quick look, a very brief look at that code, which is executed, which is meant to be executed when the function is called. Essentially, so the function, what should the function do when it is called? It should evaluate the expression E, because this is the body of the function. So therefore, this code, starting at A, essentially will produce, will consist of the code V for the expression E. There's only two things to be remembered. The first thing is, we have to think of what is the address environment when the function is called. This is a new address environment, therefore it's 0 prime. We have to think of what is the stack distance when the function is called. And we have to consider what are these kind of weird instructions which are completely new. So these are the questions which we have to answer. And so let us think. So here you see the definition of this row prime, which I immediately want to explain. And here you see that the stack distance is 0. Why is the stack distance 0 when the function is entered? Because, according to our convention, the formals are, the actual parameters are all pushed on top of the stack, and nothing else is on top of the stack. So therefore, the stack pointer points to the leftmost parameter, which is exactly the position of SP0. So there's the stack pointer is at position SP0 when the function is entered. Therefore, we have here stack distance 0. Okay? Now, what is the row prime? The row prime, what does it speak about? It speaks about the variables which are in existence at the beginning of the body of the function. What variables are visible at the beginning of the at this position before E is evaluated? These are the formals and the globals. So therefore, the row prime must provide the relative addresses for the formals and for the globals. So what are the relative addresses of the formals? According to our definition, if the formals are x0 to xk minus 1, then the formals are local variables where the index is the negative relative address. So the x0 receives relative address 0, the x1 relative address minus 1, and so on. So this takes care of the formals. And what about the globals? Well, the globals, they sit in the global vector. And so we have G globals. That was our convention. So G globals. And their relative addresses inside the function is 0 to G minus 1 as global vectors. That is this part. This is the row prime. Okay? Can we agree on that? So that is the variables, once again, this set 0 to set g minus 1 outside the function are locals, globals, or whatnot. But then we have wrapped them into the global vector, and inside the function we access those variables only through the global vector. So therefore, now they are global variables inside the function. Okay? So now again, what are the leftovers, which I have not yet explained to you here, and that is this one and that one. And these two things we will kind of consider in due time. So they are meant to deal with undersupply and oversupply of arguments. These are kind of checks for whether sufficiently many arguments are available, that the code can be evaluated, or and such things. So these are this kind of extra decoration which we have to provide in order to allow for under and oversupply with arguments. Okay? So here the make vector thing I have already explained to you. And now here this make funval, funval A. So what was the gist of this instruction? It expects the global vector on top of the stack, and it takes as an extra argument the start code of when the function is called. And so it produces such an F object. F was the tag for functional objects. This A moves here into the code pointer. The global vector here, that moves here into the global thing. And for the argument vector, there is no argument, so therefore we take the empty vector. Okay, so that's all. So this make funval in the sense is simple. Is there any question? Now we have, so let's see what we can do now for, when we want to produce code for this little function. Yeah? So, and this little function, if we want to produce code V for it in an address environment, a row and in a with a stack distance 1, for example. And we assume that the address environment maps A into a local variable with relative address 1. So you see here, inside F, once again, sorry that I insist on that so much, inside of F, A is global, but outside of F, A very well may be a local variable. Okay? So that's kind of the current situation. And so we want to construct this, do the code V for that functional expression. So what would we have to do? The first thing is construct the global vector. So how do we get the global vector? Currently stack distance is 1. We want to access A and put it on top of the stack. A is a local, relative address 1, stack distance is 1, 1 minus 1 is 0, so therefore, push log 0 to get the value of A. So, and if we are here in a call by value and via, no, it's just that. Push log zero, and then we make the vector to produce the global vector. And then we do the make funval A, and then we have this jump B, and B is the first address after the code for the which is to be executed when the function is called. So that, if you like, yellow area starting here and ending there is the code for the function. So, and in that yellow area, let's see what we can. So it starts with this, so it's a function with one argument, therefore test arg 1 in the beginning and it return 1 at the end. And in between, there was this code V for stack distance 0. Okay, so A plus B must be evaluated. So we may write down perhaps the row prime. The row prime will map, so there is the B. B gets which kind of, what do I have to write here? It's a formal parameter, so it's a local variable, therefore, with what is the relative address? 0, yes. Why? We start counting the formals with starting with 0. Okay, now what is the A? This is a global relative address, 0, because there is only one. Okay, so this is our row prime, which we may use when evaluating, when doing this code generation. So we have to do A plus B. So A is a global with a relative address 0. Therefore, push log 0, eval, and get basic to get hold of the value of A on top of the stack. Now for the B, so the B is a local, and the stack distance currently is 1. So therefore we have to do 1 minus 0 gives push log 1. And then again, eval and get basic to get hold of the value of B on top of the stack, and then we add. And then we have the value of A plus B on top of the stack. We have to put it into the heap again by doing this make basic, and that's it. Okay. Is any question? The targ k and return k has nothing to do with the stack distance. They are for the under and oversupply with parameters. So I will explain it. So I do not as you notice here.
why do we need the difference between push log and push log in this case? Because both are extracted from the row prime, right?
Once again?
Both push log 0 and push log 1 in the function body are taken from the row prime, right?
Yes.
Why do we need to make the difference here then?
Why do you mean it? No, the push log are taken from the stack, and the push glob are taken from the vector. Yeah, the formals are put on the stack. So there could be There is kind of a there are various. So this is one strategy how to do it. What one could at some point also put the formals into a vector of arguments, and then address them relative to that vector. This would be another possibility. And the third possibility would be to push the globals also onto the stack and address them relative to the stack. That would mean that one would have to do this addressing of the vector once in order to put them onto the stack. The vector must be in this functional value. But then when the function is called, we could put it onto the stack. But that is a matter of taste. And here we since the vector has been constructed, we can use it also directly to for the addressing. Yes. The if it's a global, then the relative address is the offset in the global vector. Okay, I guess it's time is over for today. We made quite some progress. I thank you for your attention, and so then let's see what tomorrow will bring.